Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Four Kia, Hyundai, great pre-owned inventory. Trade-ins never been worth more. And there's so often where Matt's wanted to trade me in. I don't get it. Great service department, takes care of the routine, inspections, difficult. It's one-stop shopping where customer service means everything. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
Ready to call for it. Three to his right. Takes the snap, sets the laces, bounces in the pocket, hit from behind, flips it forward. It is intercepted! Intercepted! A pick six! David Long Jr. plucks it at the one. He's got an interception return for a touchdown.
Former Nittany Lion, who then eventually transferred out, but boy, did I like him. Personally, as a player, I really liked him, and personally, I really liked him. Troy Reader was the one that made that play. And Nick Scott played very well again last night. Good win for the Rams. They've got the Bucks next. That should be a really good game. The matchups this weekend are far more difficult to pick. Big night tonight in Boston. The Carolina Hurricanes will take on the Bruins. It is the night that the Bruins will finally retire number 22, Willie O'Ree's number. Willie O'Ree was the first black NHL player in 1957. And he will have his number finally retired tonight in Boston. And it's great that Willie is still here with us, which is great. I'm never big on, well, you know, his family's there. It's like, people are alive. By the way, the NHL is going to stop testing asymptomatic players after the All-Star break. You wanted something done, Matt. You wanted something. You demanded it. People listen to you now.
Apparently, yeah. I get it, but I still would be a little nervous about it because...
Why? I mean, I'm around this all the time. I'm telling you. All right? The people that are being tested have symptoms. If you're if you are somebody with symptoms, even if you're vaccinated, you get tested. If you're not... you're sitting there like, how do you feel? I feel fine. I mean, how often are you running to the doctor to get tested?
I mean, I get it. The problem is they say you can still have it, and then you worry about continued spread like that. But I guess because of the way things are, I kind of get it.
But this goes to what the NFL said. Now, the NFL, remember, has now gone through 2 years of practical application.
Correct, yes.
And what did they say?
Asymptomatic players aren't the problem as far as the spread goes.
Zero. He said, I can't say it's zero, but geez, he said, we'd have to work hard to find it. He said, it's the symptomatic players that have spread it. This is the NFL with 2 years of practical in the trenches application. Right? Okay, now, see, that's data. Okay, that's, you know, okay, that means something than some Tetros guy in some other part of the world telling me, like, oh, no, it's like, yeah, okay, hold on, pal. This guy over here, like, is, like, actually sees people who have it. I think I'm going to listen to him, okay? And they've gone through 2 years. That's why they're going this path across the board. They're going this way across the board because now, after 2 years, not after a month, 2 months, hey, no, they've gone 2 years now, Matt, of this. Starting with mini, you know, it's starting with training camps, how they had to play last season, how they had to test every day. I think everybody's kind of like has a better handle on what is and isn't. And they're finding that the asymptomatic, how do you feel? I feel fine. Well, they're figuring out. They're not spreading it. But that guy over there who's like, I got a little scratchy throat. I got a little nasal congestion. You're like, whoa. Okay, hold on. You're the issue. Let's test them. Let's find out. Who have you been around? That's a smarter way to go about your business. Right? Especially, I mean, if you're vaccinated, isn't that part of the deal of being vaccinated? You get a little more leeway in life. You're asymptomatic and you're vaccinated. Isn't that kind of like... they shouldn't even say they're asymptomatic. They're sitting there like, I'm not sick. I mean, don't you know when you're sick? When you were out, did you know you were sick?
Oh, yeah, definitely. No, it's a good point.
That's the way it is for all of us in our lives. You sit there and go, okay, you know, boy, I'm really run down, or, oh, I really am clogged up. Oh, man, I got a sore throat. You know that, hey, wait a minute, I'm coming down with something. Now, let's use some common sense here. That's what they're trying to do with this. They're trying to use more common sense along the way with what they're doing. You feel something, you get tested. All right? You don't. Why? Because they've already had 2 years of practical application that shows that, well, it's kind of like a waste of time, to be honest with you. They're not spreading it. Those are the people in the trenches that are there every day doing this in the NFL. And that's why you're seeing other leagues going to it, because guess what? I can tell you they're probably having the same experience. I know in college they're having the same experience. I can tell you that. I'm around it every day. Remember, I'm around it every day. So I'm not coming at this from a, you know, 30,000-foot level here. I'm on the plane with them. I'm at the practices with them. I'm at the games. I'm there. I see the bad calls the referees make in routes.
You're right.
Sorry. That's a different topic. All right, let's bring in Neil Coulong. Talk about the Steelers. We knew this was going to happen. Neil and I rehearsed this segment a week ago. Neil.
It's great to be here. And yes, I think that was my greatest prediction of the year. Kansas City was going to beat Pittsburgh in the wild card round of the playoffs.
I know I fought you hard on that prediction. I mean, I apologize for it. I was vehement. And
you put up a good argument. I thought about it. I thought long and hard.
I said they're going to get roasted. I said the Eagles are going to get roasted. The Patriots are going to get roasted. All right. So let's put just very quickly on the game. You and I both know that so much of this, we can talk scheme all we want, but scheme's only good if you got the right matchups. This was a bad matchup from the get-go. Why?
Depth and just really the talent in one for one. I mean, if we were to pick it apart, and it, you can't really do this, but just for perspective's sake, look at Travis Kelce and look at Pat Freiermuth. Look at Deontay Johnson, look at Tyreek Hill, look at Najee Harris, and look at any one of their speed demon running backs, multi-position guys, your Jerick McKinnon types of guys. Kansas City just has explosive playmakers, and Pittsburgh does not. And on top of that, you know, the biggest one of all would be the quarterback position. Kansas City has a quarterback that's capable of consistently throwing the ball 15-plus yards down the field. That gives you a dimension within your offense to do things, and it's exactly why. Yeah, it was great. You know, it was a lot of fun. The first couple drives, Steelers defense was playing really well. They were. There's no doubt about that. Yeah. They did a lot of good things, but you're not going to stop that team for four quarters. There's just no way you can do that in today's NFL. They're going to put points on the board. And then along with that, you had a couple breakdowns within the Steelers' defense. And just like that, it was 21-7. And that's the result of Kansas City doing what it normally does, whereas getting up 7-0 was Pittsburgh moving the ball literally 1 foot at a time and then making plays on defense to do it. It's not sustainable. They're just top to bottom. Pittsburgh's offense was they were terrible, especially over the second half of the year. It was worse than it was last season. And a large part of that is they do not have playmakers, explosive playmakers. They've got a lot of guys that can plod. There are a lot of guys that will make plays, come up with your combat catches or do things on third and five. They don't have guys that can flip the field. They don't have guys who are a threat to make a big play every time they touch the ball, regardless of where they are in the field. So exactly to your point, scheme is irrelevant if you don't have playmakers. And they completely lack playmakers on offense. We've seen it all year. We've seen it for the better part of 2 years. They're just not good enough.
And if you do have a playmaker, you have to catch the ball more than 50% of the time. And that's a big problem. I felt like every time I watch Deontay Johnson, I feel like I'm watching the movie The Replacements. It's like, where he can fly down the field.
Such a frustrating game from him, too. Because the first one ran a beautiful slant, ran an all-pro level slant. The cornerback has to know Johnson when he's closer to the tight end, when he lines up. He's got to be thinking slant is a pretty good option here. Yeah. He's lining up on him evenly. He wasn't giving it to him. The ball was snapped. Johnson was off, and he was gone immediately. He beat him immediately off the ball, and it clunked square off his hand. Yeah. It's like, oh, God, that was a first down. And that's not the end-all, be-all of the game. But two of those would have been first downs that he dropped. I had him in three drops. Two of them would have been first downs.
Yeah.
That extends drives. That gets you, theoretically, three more plays. That runs some more time. That gets your offense more plays to run to see what the defense is doing. When you punt every down for a half, you're just simply not going to get into any type of rhythm, and you don't have anything to adjust to. I mean, you weren't good at anything, so it was extremely frustrating to see that after the year that he had, because he came on. He was really good over the last 8-9 games of the season. You saw really how good that he can be, and he was getting open. He gives himself the opportunity to make plays, but it just didn't work for whatever reason. Who knows? I mean, it's not the velocity of the ball. I know that. So it really it's frustrating to see. But, if nothing else, Johnson showed up every game. He played the game hard. He's gotten a lot better as a player. I think he still has room to grow. He's just going to have to get that figured out, if that's something that he can even do.
All right. So now let's get to the coordinator situation. Matt Canada and Keith Butler. What are your thoughts?
Canada, I can't say the full statement on the air, but you really can't make chicken salad out of chicken stuff. He didn't have weapons available to do much. The reason this offense this season looks so much like it did last season is because you had a lot of the same guys. It's not the guy calling the plays. They have to draw up stuff that can work. You don't go in to make plays to try to trick people all the time. It's not a Disney movie, okay? They can adjust to what you're doing. They can figure out what you're doing. You need to be able to do simple things well, and they couldn't do that. They're just not very good, top to bottom. I'm not concerned so much with the direction of the offense in year one of Matt Canada. What I would look at more now is he's had a year under his belt as far as running everything. What are they going to do? What is it going to look like? What's their plan going to be? They've got a solid running back. They're going to have a new quarterback. I'm going to guess it's Mason Rudolph, but maybe it's somebody completely different. They're going to need to draft playmakers, so you're putting the Steelers' reputation to find good receivers at some point in the draft on the line with this. It's similar to last year in the sense that they have more needs than they have picks. So how are they going to make that a priority? I think to some degree, if you want to challenge Canada, it's going to have to be, you need to get him mid to late round guys, and he's going to have to make something out of them. So that's not just on him. That's on the position coaches as well, but they all contribute to that. I don't think you get rid of him after a year. I'm not sure there was a point in hiring him simply because last year at this time when we had this conversation, I said the same thing. They're not going to be a good offensive team next year because they don't have the guys. It takes a while to build and develop that. They've got to be able to make that move this year. They're going to have to add something explosive on offense, and I think Canada is going to have to be, you know, kind of an eye for that as far as what they have internally, as far as what's in the draft, as far as what's available. He's going to have to weigh in on that, and they're going to let him, you know, sleep in the bed that he made. As far as Butler goes, I've heard the rumors, retirement's a possibility. I think either way, he's probably at the end of his rope. They're going to need to continue to change what they're doing. Their offense now does have to kind of, or defense, excuse me, does have to kind of go through TJ Watt fully. They've made the financial commitment to it. They're going to have a lot more younger guys coming in. I think they did a lot of different stuff in their secondary this year. And with that, you probably still need to refresh talent there. You're going to have to figure out James Pierre because you're letting Joe Haden walk for him, and you bench James Pierre halfway through the year and let Akilah Witherspoon, who didn't play at all, step up and look pretty good. He's probably not coming back. He's going to sign somewhere that's above Pittsburgh's desired pay range, and you're going to have to make it work with James Pierre. You're probably going to have to get more out of Cam Sutton, and with that, if Cam Sutton's on the field, hope they don't play Kansas City ever again. He got destroyed in that game. That was really bad.
Yep.
And you're going to have to draft one, and then you'll sign the standard Steelers veteran slot guy like they always do. To me, that's a defensive overhaul in a lot of ways. They have a lot of good pieces in place, but the defensive line needs to be overhauled. Their inside linebackers, you got some pretty good questions there of what you're going to do. They might be at zero at that position. Who knows? I think it's time for a change in direction there. It's not so much that Butler did a terrible job or Tomlin had to bail him out or anything like that. It's time to find somebody else. I think Terrell Austin is the guy they've had in mind to do exactly that. And I'm not against that. I think he did a great job with the secondary. And I think the secondary really kind of has to become more of a strength of the team now. And I mean across the entire board. They're going to have to play eight defensive back deep. That's kind of the way the NFL works nowadays.
Yeah.
And I think Austin has better insight to that than Butler has shown to from the past before Austin came in. So I think Austin's probably their guy. And with that too, maybe they're going to take a look at the linebacker position and look how to recoach that. Jerry Althoff, he's done a great job. He's been there for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a real problem there, though, and that's something that's going to have to be addressed in every phase of the offseason. That might include coaching as well.
All right. The Steelers, along Green Bay and the Patriots, bucked the trend the last 20-plus years. Where in the NFL, the way it's designed between schedule, drafting, and so forth, you're supposed to have a dip, and then you're supposed to recover. The Steelers, Packers, and Patriots, in one form or another, stayed in the neighborhood of the playoffs and relative through the entire two-decade period. Okay, Favre, Rodgers, Brady, Roethlisberger all were centerpieces for making that happen. I know Ben at the end, the last 2 years, I felt like he did more aiming of the ball than he did throwing of the football. But how would you put Ben Roethlisberger's career into perspective?
I think Ben, overall, I hate to say this because I sound like a TV studio analyst that kind of just does the surface evaluation things, but the best way to describe Ben is tough. He gutted games out. And more than, you know, the level of competitive leadership that he showed, I think, is something the Steelers are going to see next year as a step down. They don't have guys like that. Ben did not let his team give up. And granted, there are games like his last one that were, you know, both completely out of reach and, you know, him playing his best didn't do anything. But there are games in which he brought the team back. They made them. He was able to make them more competitive. Because he wasn't going to let them just lose. He wasn't going to quit. There's a resounding effect of that on a team. When you know that you have a guy like that, you want to rise to that level. Without that, I think the Steelers are going to feel it. And to me, that's what a legacy really is. What is the team after the guy? What happens to them after? I'm not sure what they're going to look like. But to your point, he was aiming the ball because he really couldn't throw it. I don't care what anybody says. He did not have many instances in which he was able to rear back and really gun it the way that we've seen it. And the guy, you know, he essentially fought wars on the field. He was bludgeoned over a very long career. He paid the toll for his Hall of Fame induction with his body, and we're going to see that as the years go on, I think.
Yeah.
He didn't have it. He got away with it, though, and I've said this for years. Ben was always one of the more underrated, intelligent quarterbacks. He was a very cerebral player. He knew what to do with the ball, and I think this year, probably more than anything, we saw that. He only had, what, 8 interceptions or something like that. They still threw a lot. I mean, a lot of it was because they were way behind, but he made good decisions with the ball this year because he knew he had to protect it. Mm-hmm. In the past, he might not have felt that as much because they had such an explosive offense. They were going to be able to get it back. But if he could beat a team by halftime, that's what he wanted to do. He couldn't play like that. He had to adjust his game. And while he wasn't difference-making good, he wasn't bad either. You know, if Ben wanted to play and he really felt that, there's a team that would pay him $20 million to play for him next year. I guarantee you that. Look around the league. I mean, you know, the teams that weren't in the playoffs, you saw some horrible quarterbacks. And I know that it's unfair that Patrick Mahomes kind of has to set the standard of quality quarterback play, but that's what it is now. Ben would be able to get on a field and not screw anything up and put his team in position to win better than a lot of the quarterbacks that are in the league today. But he doesn't have anything left physically. He wasn't going to be a difference maker. I guess all of that really just speaks to the fact that in many ways, I would just say he was very underrated in terms of the full scope of his game. He won a lot. He's not a top echelon guy, but I think he made his mark on this generation of the NFL and this era of the NFL in a very positive and very memorable way. And to me, that's about as strong an endorsement I think you can give anybody who right now is not Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, guys that, you know, Ben's peers, even a Drew Brees. These are some absolutely phenomenal quarterbacks. And Ben wasn't far below any of them. I think Ben made his team better on a game-to-game basis, and the dude was tough as nails. You loved watching him, and they're going to miss him. Even if he wasn't physically at his best, he made that team better doing everything that he could in every season, and it wasn't always going to be enough to win a Super Bowl, but he put everything out there, and I'm curious to see how they're going to replace that.
Not only that, I think it's just a guess on my part, but you got a feeling that he was in charge more at the line of scrimmage with what they were going to run in the fourth quarter of games, and his passer rating was exponentially higher in the fourth quarter this year. It's just a guess on my part, but my guess is because he really was in charge at that point.
That would not surprise me at all, and I'm gonna go off the rails here a little bit. This is a really silly example, I know, but I saw Van Halen in concert in 2012. And this is like 62-year-old David Lee Roth singing. For the first hour and a half of the show, David Lee Roth wasn't even singing every third note. You know, it's like he was pacing himself the entire time. And it was really boring. It wasn't good. I was kind of frustrated. I knew what I was getting into, but it wasn't a very good show. The last 9 or 10 songs, it was obvious that he cranked it up. Like, he had been saving himself for this the entire time, and that really kind of became the show. I think that, in a way, is to some degree, is kind of what Ben was doing. I think he figured out what a defense was doing, and by the end of it, he had a good sense of what they were going to do, and that's when he turned it on. His best throws were always in the second half and usually in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. He didn't start off the game well, I don't think, in any game they played this year and probably most of last year. He had to use what he had sparingly. We saw at times he had some physical ability left. I remember a throw against Indianapolis last year that he hadn't attempted all game or all season, and he hit it, you know, square on the money. He had moments of that this season, but not enough to make you think he could do it over that time. It's almost like he was trying to save himself. And that speaks to, he probably just doesn't have anything left physically. And that's really all that he had to give.
Well, you know what? He felt like he gave it all for 18 years. Now, time to turn the page. It's going to be one of those situations where sometimes you don't know what you have until you don't. There are going to be some Pittsburgh fans that are going to sit back and go, oh, man, I missed that dude. So
we'll hear it in week one.
Yes.
Well, he's not then. And
yeah.
We're going to hear that for a generation.
Yeah. My friend, thanks so much. A lot to talk about in this offseason, so look forward to talking next week.
Definitely. Looking forward to doing that. Thanks for having me.
Long. All right, bottom of the hour. Time for the 5 minutes of depression. That's the news here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. While Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory. Pre-owned inventory may be the route you need to go. Okay. If that is the case, no problem. They have the best selection of pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. It is also a place that you go to get your inspections and to take care of your routine service and the difficult jobs. It's one-stop shopping. It is all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. All right. So let's get to Tom Hannafin. Tom's been working with Matt McGloin on podcast, but he also has been in the world of professional wrestling. So we wanted to go into an area that we thought Matt was most familiar with. Matt is into criticism and conflict.
F-O-U-L-E-D, that spells foul.
Tom, welcome. It's great to have you back.
I'm doing great, Steve. It's been a whirlwind couple of weeks for me, and I'm sure for football fans everywhere, wrestling fans everywhere. So yeah, just trying to stay busy. You know how it is.
And you are staying busy, as a matter of fact. Do you mind if we talk just before we get to football about Impact?
Absolutely.
You've carved out a great career in this profession. What's the opportunity with Impact Wrestling look like for you?
It's really exciting, Steve, and it's something that, you know, I never in a million years when I was at Penn State thought that I would have a broadcasting career that involved professional wrestling. And I got really, really lucky getting hired by WWE at the age of 23. I had nearly 9 fantastic years with them. Since left the company, and now I have this great opportunity with a company called Impact Wrestling. Their shows take place on Access TV every Thursday night. You can learn more about them on impactwrestling.com. This is one of the most exciting wrestling companies in the business right now. And the great thing for me, Steve, is that it's a passion of mine. Professional wrestling became a passion of mine, something I care deeply about. This schedule is fantastic for me. It's not the wear and tear that I got used to with WWE, where it's 52 weeks a year. And you personally know what it's like to have seasonal jobs, and it's nice to have seasons where you're chilling for a little bit. So this yeah. is really nice for me in that I have wrestling as part of my life, as part of my career and portfolio. But allows me to do whatever I want to do, whether that be in sports or entertainment, and it just kind of opens up the possibilities for me. So I'm very excited.
In that profession, it's one of those that you have to be in to understand it, because the fans see what the fans see. How many great people are involved in this, and how cooperative is everybody in making, quote, the show work?
It is the true team effort mentality. I had it at WWE, and I saw it at Impact Wrestling. It was really amazing to see how many hats everybody wears at Impact, just people running around trying to do everything possible. And then, oh, by the way, they've got to be either competing in a match, or they then have to help with something backstage, or they're doing something for the office. It was really amazing. But I think the thing that gets lost when people look at professional wrestling in the world of sports broadcasting is that, oh, well, it doesn't necessarily translate. And I completely disagree, as somebody who's had my feet in both sides, is that professional wrestling asks you to do everything. There are situations where, yes, you might know what's coming, but you never know exactly how it's going to land emotionally. You have the benefit of when a great play happens, you're reacting organically. Well, imagine if you knew that great play was going to happen and you had to nail that emotion in the moment. It's live narration. It's live voice acting. And those broadcasts built on good intentions. Guys get injured. Accidents happen. And it's a really, really challenging atmosphere to live in. But there's nothing else like it, Steve. I run the gamut of emotions every single time I do professional wrestling broadcasts. And there's just nothing quite like it.
No, it is remarkable, because every once in a while, you know, like in what we, you know, every single play we never know, even though you're anticipating something, sometimes it doesn't quite work the way everybody thought it was going to be, and it does bring with a reaction.
Yeah, and that's the great thing about sports, and that's the great thing about pro wrestling, I think, is that there are organic moments. There are things that, yes, it is a program where it is planned entertainment, but we're all pretty accustomed to some of our favorite TV shows, and we allow ourselves to get lost in the moment and suspend disbelief for a little while for whatever program it is that you like. And we kind of do the same thing in football. You know, I think we all tuned into the Outback Bowl thinking, man, maybe Penn State can pull this off, and it just didn't go that way. But you live to fight another day, and that's the great thing about it.
You're also, of course, still very heavily involved in football. Let's get to the NFL part, because I know you did a lot of Eagles analysis, especially heading into the playoff game. Like, Tom, I wasn't even remotely surprised. I mean, I think maybe a year from now, when Tampa Bay's older, doesn't have everybody back, the Eagles are a little older, have three draft picks, they're better positioned, but they weren't positioned for this. They were in over their heads from the time that it was announced.
I agree with you. It's a bad draw in the first round to take on the reigning Super Bowl champions. People have been doubting the Buccaneers at points this season, but we all know what a Tom Brady-led football team can be when the pressure is on. And I firmly believe the Bucs have a chance to repeat this year. So you have that, and then I said it on ABC 27 with Logan Reaver. I just was like, Jalen Hurts has to have the best game of his career, and that just was not the case. Now, was it entirely Jalen Hurts' fault? No, the offensive line had one of its worst days as well. His receiving core, his running backs also didn't do a ton to help him. And then defensively, the Eagles were really, really poor. And they had been pretty solid there for the back half of the season. So that was not necessarily a surprise, but you kind of knew that Brady and company were going to get their yards, they were going to get their points. But it was an unstoppable force most of the afternoon from Tampa Bay. So it's just discouraging, Steve, if you're an Eagles fan. Going into the offseason now, it's just a myriad of questions. A lot of them are getting thrown at Jalen Hurts, some deservedly so, some not. But there's a lot of changes that have to take place, because this was a very bad football team considering they had a winning record.
Yeah, well, look, the system worked in their favor. I mean, you know, when you've got two wins over the Giants, two over the Washington football team, a win over the Jets, a win over the Lions, that's six of your wins out of nine. That's not bad. But when you're a team that made the playoffs and you've got three first-round picks, there is room to operate here, isn't there, Tom?
There is. The overwhelming fear, however, if you're a Philadelphia Eagles fan, is general manager Howie Roseman. Your three first-round picks, yes. Now, you do have to consider, from a dollars and cents point of view, does it really make a lot of sense to utilize all three of those picks? It would make sense to me that maybe one of those picks gets traded, whether you're trying to move up, there's somebody that you like, or you're just trying to bank picks for the future. But you would hope, as an Eagles fan, you know, it's heart versus head, you would hope that you use two out of three of those picks maybe to get some guys that contribute next season immediately and can maybe get you over the hump to a better playoff push. The likelihood, because Howie Roseman's track record has indicated as such, is that there's a real good chance he trades most or all of these picks. And it's a scary prospect for Eagles fans because you go into these drafts thinking, is this going to be another Jalen Reagor draft? Or is this going to be a Devontae Smith hit? It's been very unpredictable, unfortunately, for the last number of years.
Well, it wasn't just Smith. You got Landon Dickerson, too. I mean, so
that was a great pickup.
Yeah,
yes.
You know what? So, you know, to his credit, he went to Tuscaloosa, looked around, and said, I think we can get all our shopping done here.
And a lot of guys think that. It's really spectacular. But then on the other side, I remember a few years ago, Andre...
Yep.
Andre Dillard was supposed to be the heir apparent to Jason Peters.
Yep.
That did not pan out. And
no.
Luckily, Jordan Mailata, a long shot from Australian football, has turned into one of the most promising left tackles in football. There needs to be a youth movement for the Eagles along the offensive and defensive lines.
Well, you don't have your quarterback retiring, so you know, so far, you know, we'll see how that goes.
It's different on the other side of the state.
The other side of the, but you know what? The other side of the state's been relevant for 20 years because of them, right?
Fair.
And that's, which, by the way, in this league, the Packers, the Patriots, and the Steelers have defied how the league is supposed to operate. You're supposed to operate actually the way the Eagles have been operating, where, you know, you go along okay, then you hit a dip. You get the schedule, you get some draft picks, boom, you get back up again, then you dip again. And those guys, said, you know, the Patriots, Packers, because they've had Rodgers or Favre, they've had Roethlisberger, they had Brady, they didn't dip. So.
No, it's been astonishing good fortune. I'm very curious to see what the Steelers do. I'm in the camp that I don't think Mason Rudolph is the long-term solution. And this is also not exactly the greatest draft for quarterbacks. So do you... It feels like anybody that might take a quarterback in the first round is really reaching. And also the Steelers, by virtue of making the playoffs, that pick is not going to be as high as they would like. And then even some of the names that are out there, you just mentioned Aaron Rodgers. Some people are talking about Russell Wilson maybe being on the move. Are you essentially going to rent a guy for a season? Is that the answer? Who knows?
Well, if I knew, I'd tell you.
I love that. I can play some bets down. That would make it really easy. Thank you.
By the way, just very quickly on Penn State, how important is this offseason now heading into spring practice? The roster is now at 84. They got 9 of the guys in early.
And that's always such an encouraging thing. And, Steve, you deal with that so often interacting with the coaching staff and the players, is that the quicker these guys can get on campus and start learning is really fantastic. And considering the pieces that Penn State fans are hopeful to see contribute, people are looking at, you know, Nick Singleton and Catron Allen as running backs. Are they going to jump in? Noah Kane just transferred to LSU. Kevon Lee is the incumbent, but what's going to happen there? But the real question, and I can't wait to hear you guys call the blue-white game, is what's going on at quarterback, because Sean Clifford did not slam the door on all his potential challengers in the Outback Bowl. He obviously has the experience. He's probably going to have the favor of the coaching staff. Christian Veau made his case in the Rutgers game, but then you've got Bo Pribula, who I think people are sleeping on, has been compared athletically to Trace McSorley, and then Drew Allar. You cannot sleep on this guy. He's one of the most highly touted quarterback prospects in a while. Now, we as Penn State fans have seen that with the likes of Christian Hackenberg, so the proof will be in the pudding, so to speak. But I can't wait for the blue-white game, because there's going to be a lot of guys that, once they get out there and we get a feel for what they are, that can really spark some positivity.
There are a couple reasons I'm looking forward to the blue-white game. One, for the reasons you just talked about. Two, because it's football. And three, as I look out the window, I'll see grass and not snow. All right. So.
Headline, Steve Jones is cold.
Tom, always a pleasure. Hey, congrats on Impact. I think that's great for them, great for you. I'm thrilled for you.
I appreciate it, Steve. All my best to you. Enjoy the offseason and stay warm.
Okay, thanks so much, Tom.
Tom Hanifin. All right, we'll take a break. Matt has one or two more gripes. He feels officiating doomed the Eagles. Let that sink in. On News Radio 1070 WKOK.
But I'm proud to play with these guys. God has blessed me with an ability to throw a football, and has blessed me to play in the greatest city in Pittsburgh with the greatest fans and the greatest football team and players, and it has just been truly a blessing, and I'm so thankful to him for the opportunity that he's given me.
Nick Foles. Oh, no. That was Ben Roethlisberger. Those moments before they cut Foles. All right.
Doesn't matter. He's a Super Bowl MVP now. That's all that matters.
You guys dumped him so fast. It's unreal. All right. Yeah, thanks. Thanks. Appreciate you. We're going to put a statue up with a Philly special. Great. It's a business. MVP 1 minute, baggage the next. Now, Ben Roethlisberger, really a tremendous career. I remember back in the days when they had Polamalu and some of those guys. I said, look, the single most indispensable guy is Roethlisberger. I know you can love Polamalu all you want. He is a difference maker on defense. But the quarterback is the guy that makes the engine go. Okay? And he made it go. College football, I read the article about the players being, not enamored with playing extra games in the ACC. Pat Narduzzi made an interesting point. He said, you don't know what our injury report looks like once we get to November. And that's one thing, actually, I do. And it is not without a point. I do know what the injury report looks like every year in November. As I've said on the show, if you're not, most everybody's sore and banged up. They're going to have to do something about this. One is, and I already mentioned maybe 2 weeks ago, I think they need to build in a second bye week for everybody. I think you need it somewhere in there, and a second bye week would really help. If you're going to expand the playoff, I also think you need to expand the roster. I think instead of 85 players on your roster, I think you need to, and this is not going to be popular at all with Title IX, but I think you need to go to 100. You need to add 15 more. And I think also that when you get to a 15th game, you're now allowed to have a fifth game without burning your red shirt. So if you're allowed to have, I would go 4 for 12 and 5 for 15. That would keep extra individuals available. Now, there are other elements that would have to be worked out, but and I know that's not going to be popular with Title IX. But if more money is going to be coming in from the playoff, the money would be available for those scholarships.